Hey, football fans, this is Diana Rossini from The Athletic. Get the top stories in pro football snapped directly to your inbox with our latest NFL newsletter, Scoop City. Jacob Robinson and I will bring you the daily scoop of top NFL articles, posts, and podcasts every Monday to Friday. Sign up for free now at theathletic.com/scoop.
Hello and welcome to another edition of the Standing Room Only podcast. Yes, I'm your host, Ben Standing. Cover the Washington Commanders for The Athletic. It's Wednesday, early evening here in the DMV. Hope everyone is doing well. We're getting some better weather these days. A little, colder starting about right now than it's been the last few days. But obviously the sun is out. No hints of crazy bad weather. We did have extreme wind today to the point that my front door was closed but not locked. And a wind gust blew the door open and gave me a mild heart attack, which I'm fortunate to say I've recovered from. But other than that, pretty good out there and pretty calm out in Ashburn as far as we know. No moves today at this exact moment, but I know they're still looking and exploring, and I would expect more free agent signings to come in the days ahead, maybe even soon enough or sooner than later. But it is now back to the point where we're going more to the draft discussion. The pro days for these quarterbacks began today. Caleb Williams out at USC. Michigan with J.J. McCarthy is on Friday. And then Drake May and Jaden Daniels next week. So we'll get into more of that later. But today, a more broad overview of kind of where we're at with Washington in terms of the draft, in terms of what tea leaves are we seeing for the quarterbacks. What about the moves they have made best, the ones we like the most questionable? Did they make a mistake on Cam Curl? To help me do that, our pal Nikki Jabala from The Washington Post. Always an insightful conversation with Nikki, and we got into a bunch of those topics. In addition, I'll just talk a little bit about the quarterback situation here at the top of the episode as well. So we'll get to all that in a moment here on the Standing Room Only podcast. Of course, make sure you subscribe, hit that subscribe button. And obviously, if you have a second to drop a rating and review, definitely appreciate it. Just to read a couple here. You guys are all very nice, the ones who do it. Every once in a while, we get somebody who's unthrilled. But for the most part, you guys are all great. One here from RRIG666. Amazing show, simply the most comprehensive show regarding our beloved Washington Commanders. Although comprehensive, it's easy listening with a down-to-earth podcaster, someone I would be comfortable with tipping a few brewskis with. I love your experience and knowledgeable guests. Keep up the excellent work, sir. I definitely appreciate that. What else do we have here? I don't want to just keep reading ones that say nice things, but obviously this is good. Big Curd E, huge fan of Ben, both as a podcaster and a writer for The Athletic. Great insight, level and measured. Fantastic Reese's for all things Commanders related. I will just say I've seen a lot of nice messages about what we've done so far here, both on the website and here on the podcast over the last few weeks. I really do try to not just go with the takiest thing of the day, the juiciest story, scoop of the day. Or if I do, we try to explain what makes sense and what is kind of nonsense, and I really do appreciate the feedback. So if you got a second to drop that rating or review, definitely helps. I really appreciate it. Also, again, The Athletic, a dollar a month offer is there, a dollar a month for a year. Just click on one of my articles. On Monday, I had a story up about sort of my view of where things are at after free agency. What are some of the points that kind of stood out to me? And we'll have more coming up here. Again, a lot more focus coming up on the draft for sure. And next week is the owners meeting. I will be there. So will be Dan Quinn, Adam Peters, and Josh Harris. If we have opportunities to speak with them, and I believe we will, then I will let you know, or at least some of them. We'll see what happens. And I will, if that happens, we'll certainly talk about that here on the podcast. All right. Now, as I said, the pro days have begun. I caught some of the footage of Caleb Williams on ESPN. I think the NFL Network is going to have a whole show about it later on Wednesday night. And our USC correspondent or reporter, Antonio Morales, was there. He tweeted out some pictures. You can go check out his Twitter. Just look at mine. I retweeted them as well, or tweeted them out. as well. You could see Adam Peters, Dan Quinn are there, Cliff Kingsbury, you know, Lance Newmark is there somewhere. You know, they have their contingent there. We're going to assume that all those guys will be going to the subsequent ones. They're definitely going to Michigan, and barring the unforeseen, they'll be at the North Carolina and LSU is one as well. If you watch it on TV, enjoy it, right? I mean, have fun. A part of what this whole journey is it's the wins and the losses, but you want to believe that they're going to get the best quarterback they think they can get. And, you know, the fandom part of this is fun, right? This would be the guy, because it's the position that so many people will run out and get a jersey immediately, and maybe a lot more jump in if they see signs of success or they like the cut of their jib or what have you. And all these guys look exciting, right? Daniels, if you've watched his highlight tape at LSU, it's pretty impressive. Drake May, same. And J.J. McCarthy certainly didn't throw it as much as those guys did, but he also was 27-1 in his career at starts at Michigan. So there's a lot to get excited about. If they throw the ball and they make great throws, fantastic. If their throws seem to be a little bit off, it's probably not going to change much of anything based on what it is. You're throwing against air, all that type of stuff. What is important about these pro days is the stuff that we don't unfortunately get to see. For the most part, we get to see some of it in terms of how their comportment is out there. Do we get any sense on television of how their teammates gravitate towards them? But really, it's going to come down to these interactions between the team and the players. You know, it is probably reasonable to think that, you know, again, Nikki and I talked about this, that, you know, they haven't played a game since, right, over the last 2 or 3 months, and yet there's a, you know, some feeling of, ooh, there's somebody's going up, somebody's going down. That's not really an accurate depiction. It's just the outside world's catching up to them. But the unknowns are the person, right? This is why these interviews starting at the combine, perhaps at the Senior Bowl, not for the quarterbacks per se, but because they weren't there, but for any player. The combine, now at pro days, soon the players will be brought into the facility for one-on-one conversations. And this is where, you know, probably if there's any tiebreakers to be made, this is going to be where they're made. They get to talk to these players about their processing, what it is that they're seeing out on the field when they show them something on tape, what is it that they recognize, what would their reaction be, what were they thinking on a specific play, what have you. All of that is what's important. Now, here's the other thing I think that is potentially important. You know, again, these guys have been pretty tight-lipped. And then the matter is, if they're not saying anything, which I don't believe they really are, again, be cautious if you hear somebody say they talk to somebody who thinks they like Jaden Daniels or Drake May. Anything is possible, but I don't put a lot of value in that right now, based on what I've witnessed so far in terms of how they're handling their business. But what is important is when they're doing things with other people, now the chance for information getting out is different, right? Whether it could be the agent for some of these players, it could just be these whatever conversations were being had today. There's a lot of people, say, at the Caleb Williams pro day, not just from Washington, but from other teams. Do they put things out there? Other media people who have opinions, what are they saying? All of these things can give us a little bit more information about what is happening. Because it isn't also just about Washington, right? To be clear. Nikki and I talked about the Vikings. What are their intentions here? What is that? The fact that they may trade up from 11 to 4, what does that say? Or 11 to into the top 4, I should say. What does that say about their intentions? What could that mean for Washington? So, you know, I'm always cautious of reading too much into any of these reports, because a lot of times it is false or misinformation or not the whole story, but it doesn't mean it always is. And sometimes, you know, it's like the line in Inglourious Basterds in the opening, great opening scene, Landa tells the farmer that he loves rumors because, you know, true or not, there's always something there to grab onto. Why is the rumor exist even? So I do think this is going to be an interesting week for this exact thing. If we were to, we're all kind of looking for information, not getting much, but we may be able to discern a few things. And maybe it doesn't come out over the next few days. Maybe it comes out a little bit further down the line. But the more people who are involved, the more potential there is for viable or interesting information to get out there about hopes and dreams and wants and trades or whatever it may be. I don't know that we'll get anything that feels concrete about this draft until we get much closer to the end of it. But again, these pro days are notable, I think, for that far more than they are for the throwing part of it, the on-field work that we're going to see. So we'll see how that goes over the next week or so. Beyond that, again, you know, I've lost track of if we discussed this or not the other day, but Cornelius Lucas has now signed with the Commanders, or he's back. 1 year deal needed to happen. You know, again, Jeremy Reeves and Lucas were the two guys I was telling you that I thought were the most likely to come back. That's now happened. Lucas is a totally credible swing tackle. You know, will he be the week one starter? Nikki and I get into that as well. They needed depth at a minimum because of right, but even behind him, if you said who's the backup, if he's the starter, who's the backup? I couldn't tell you that either. So most likely I would think they're going to draft somebody on day two, and that person will either start or be the, you know, future starter for this team. But, you know, good for Lucas. One of the guys who, you know, he is one of the holdovers from the Ron Rivera era in terms of, like, I think somebody pointed this out. I saw on Twitter the other day that he may be now he's the longest tenured guy that came in with Rivera, right? Because the whole draft class is gone, or at least not on the team. Chase Young included, of course. And, you know, the free agents they brought in that year, for Logan Thomas, McKissick, etc., are gone as well, except for Lucas. So he's been around. He's been very reliable. This is the third contract he signed since 2020 with Washington, and good for everybody to get that done. Now we'll see what their long-term plan is at tackle. See ya. And one more thing I wanted to get in here. There was a report today from the Baltimore Banner about Ted Leontis, of course, owner of the Wizards and the Capitals, reaching out to Maryland, or talking to Maryland, about possibly could there be an arena there for those teams in light of the fact that the deal that he thought he had with Virginia may be slipping away, and still unclear what happens with the DC site. You know, a lot of times I try to, you know, look at like the logic of a situation, and the logic here doesn't really ring true. I understand if, like, it's looking for another path, because if the one is going to fall apart and going back to DC, you know, to some degree with tail between legs would not be a great look. I the idea of Maryland being involved at this point seems highly doubtful to me. And from a little bit of poking around, I don't know how much I'm buying the idea that this would be a thing. Clearly, as we know, Maryland is all in on the Commanders and trying to keep them in Maryland, a new stadium, you know, right there at the FedEx Field site. There's a waiting game going on, and I guess in part it is, what is DC going to do with the Commanders, with the Wizards and the Capitals? If the Wizards and Caps somehow did go to Virginia, I think that would put DC's urgency to get the Commanders at the RFK side even greater. If they spend a lot of money, though, to refurbish Cap 1, or, you know, to help out that situation and Leontis stays, I wonder if the DC government's going to have the money to deal with the Commanders. So I do think this is an up-in-the-air situation. And, you know, I've said before, I think the DC would be better off staying with the, you know, keeping the Wizards and Caps in Chinatown. No disrespect to the idea of having a football stadium that could maybe host a Super Bowl or World Cup matches or what have you, but that is still a relatively small amount of dates that you're going to have people there. Whereas at Cap 1, you know, it's, I don't know if it's 300 days a year, but it's probably something closer, a lot closer to that than not. So it makes sense to me that they would do their best to keep the Wizards, Caps, get, you know, update that arena and go from there. So it, to me, it believe that this is like an attempt at leverage, but I don't know that it exists in my sense from, you know, again, just folks. I don't get the sense that this is anything changed from Maryland's perspective. If it had, I imagine we'd hear a lot more about it, but it would make no sense for Maryland at this point to pursue the Wizards and the Caps. Frankly, I don't even know where you would put it, right? Because if it's going to Maryland, where are you putting it? Are you going to be the place that replaces FedEx Field, you know, for an NBA arena? That's not a great location, you know, I don't think for a lot of people. Again, preference in the city, and as much as I don't love the way the Virginia talks have gone down, at least the Arlington site is, you know, adjacent to the city, except there's a lot of traffic and other factors that would go into it that would make that an unappealing situation in a lot of ways. Maryland would just be, you know, for this, especially for the amount of dates that you're going out there, I just don't know that that one particularly works. And like I said, I just don't think that Maryland is in a position to try to get the Wizards and Caps. They are focused on the Commanders. So, you know, we'll see where this goes, but I don't, my sense is this is going nowhere. But it is interesting if Ted Leonsis is in fact scrambling to that degree that he is looking for potentially another avenue. But you can go read the Baltimore Banner for their story on this. All right, let's get to it. Here is my conversation with Nikki Jhabvala. Of course, you can follow her on Twitter at Nikki Jhabvala. Read her in the Washington Post. But right now, we played a I threw out a bunch of questions: true, false, fill in the blank, either or, what have you. Both about what they've done in free agency, the draft, and other Commander/NFL topics. So here we go, Nikki Jhabvala here on the Standard Room Only podcast. All right, as promised, joining us here again, our returning champion, Nikki Jhabvala with the Washington Post. It's been a calmer week this week. Does this mean you've had more time to fill out your NCAA bracket and just put Carolina in the title game?
Yeah, it doesn't take much for me, you know? I work backward usually in the brackets. I just put Carolina and then work backwards, so yeah.
Well, look, as somebody who, you know, grew up Georgetown, Maryland, I envy you for having a team to care about in the tournament.
Well, you know, we did just lose to NC State. That one still hurts. So
it's a little rough. I tweeted something about NC State the other day, and you immediately texted me and started to give me grief. And I was explaining that I was really making a Georgetown Wizards joke about how it's good to see some team winning in that building. And then you
congratulating them on the win, nonetheless. You deserved it, every bit of it.
You know, the upset's fun. All right. Well, anyway, I appreciate your time as always. We have talked a lot about the quarterback and the free agency and all this stuff. And
wait, Washington needs a quarterback? Really?
Well, I mean, it depends how you look at it. I still think
they're going to get a quarterback.
I think people
are
sleeping on
draft a quarterback. I'm just kidding.
They're sleeping on Jake Fromm. Frankly, I think that needs to be discussed. Now, by the way, just because I said that, now the media room will just assume I'm a Jake Fromm lover, and that'll be my thing. I've learned this before. Yes, I hear they need a quarterback. I hear they're going to go see them all at the various pro days. In fact, there was one today.
That's
for
shocking.
Caleb. Yeah, Caleb Williams was today. Peters and Quinn and everybody else was there.
Wait, you mean they need a quarterback, and the guy in charge of selecting a quarterback was there to witness it? Wow.
It is what?
Big news day.
It is. I mean, look, like if we get this information, sure, we're going to put it out there. I don't know. I guess I just find it fascinating. The breathless, oh my God, they're going to see. They're going to have the dinner with J.J. McCarthy. Oh my God. And I guess to some degree, I'm making slight fun of like the audience, and I don't mean to, because I was a fan at the point. It's just like the way it, I don't know. I guess I just don't understand. Like, don't we all assume these things are happening, or what? What do people think is happening? I don't know sometimes.
We're just as guilty for confirming and putting it out there. So, you know, we're in this together. We're in this silly game together.
We are. They're going to get a quarterback one way or the other. All right. So to that end, I came up with a bunch of like random true, false, fact or fiction questions, whatever. So I'll start with the quarterbacks, right? We'll go right there. This is not about Washington directly.
Okay. I'm scared I'm going to get like a bad grade or something. What happens if I fail?
Well, you know, we'll see if we lose your number for the next appearance. Who knows?
Ooh.
All right. All right. Fact or fiction? By acquiring a second first round pick, the Minnesota Vikings are comfortable with any of the top four quarterbacks. In other words, they would trade up to take a quarterback. That's the presumption. Are they comfortable with any of them?
I'm going to say false. I'm going to say false.
Okay. So there's been, obviously, there's connections with Drake May because of Josh McCown, who's on the former quarterback, who's on Minnesota staff, coached him in high school. Is that, are you saying that you would think that's their preference?
Not necessarily.
Oh.
I bet there is one or two they really like. This is all guessing, by the way. This is not based on any real reporting. This is all guessing. So don't hold me to this. My guess is there's one or two that they really like, and if they can get high enough, they'll feel in a good spot. I mean, just knowing their system and what they like to run, I could definitely see it being Drake May, maybe J.J. McCarthy. I'm also very curious to see how high J.J. McCarthy gets, if he gets pushed up because of the demand, you know, and the pressure that Minnesota has brought just in trading up and merely threatening to move up again. So yeah, that would be my guess. Again,
so,
guess.
Sure.
Guess.
All understood. But the reason I ask it this way is, if they're comfortable with any of them, then Arizona at four makes a lot of sense to make a trade with. The Cardinals don't need a quarterback. Sure, it would be great if they took Marvin Harrison, but you know, they're another team that's not very good. They need a lot of stuff. And, you know, you can get wide receiver and other positions later. So trading what I would assume would be like three first round picks at least, and maybe even a second or something to move up from 11 to four would be that. So that said, if they're willing to do that for Arizona, they'd be willing to do it to either Washington or New England. And the question then is, well, if they really want Drake May, just to use him as an example, you probably have to get up to at least three, maybe two. So that's why
maybe.
I'm kind of,
I would think two, if you, because if you don't know what Washington's going to do. I think Washington and Minnesota have a chance to really screw up the draft. I might screw up, I mean, just like really surprise people and create a lot of change. But if there's, you know, if there's two guys, then yeah, maybe three. This is all assuming Caleb Williams goes one to Chicago. But if there's one guy they really like in particular, then you can't take a chance on Washington. You have to move up to two. And then, but would Washington be willing to move down? You know, you gotta have an enticing enough package. And even still, are they willing to move down? They could very well be in love with somebody and want to stand pat. So this is to say that, you know, you could like a guy, you could like two guys, but it does not mean they'll necessarily be able to move up high enough to get either.
So what's interesting about this for me from the Washington perspective, and as somebody who's playing around with mock drafts and such, is, you know, not to go back to the Rivera era per se, but like early on, it became pretty apparent to sort of figure out what they were going to do to a certain degree. There was a lot of telegraphing going on. You know, Ron wasn't exactly holding his cards that tightly when it came to making some of his comments. So you could kind of tell, to at least, you know, the idea, maybe not always the player you're trying to get, but like the idea of what you were trying to do. Here, yeah, as we saw with the coaching search, they are very tight-lipped so far. And I think that's continued here. And what I get by that is, we're all assuming that they're going to take a quarterback too, and maybe they are, but is there a price point that they would say, you know what, we will trade out because of that? And it, again, so I'm looking at it like, if they're not going to talk, let's look from the outside. Minnesota making this move, I mean, if they are trying to trade up, then are they willing to take anybody, or do they want somebody? And if they want somebody, then that would mean Washington or New England is trading with them.
Right. And I think this is exactly what Washington wants, is for us all to speculate and not fully know. So good job, guys. It's maddening, from my perspective, of course. But yeah, I think this is one of the rare years when they really seriously do have every opportunity available to them. Like, they could literally do anything. They could hold pat and take a quarterback. They could stand pat and take a quarterback that's outside of the top three that everybody's been assuming will be in the top three. They could move back. What if, I'm not saying this will happen, it doesn't look like it'll happen. What I mean, especially after the Justin Fields trades, of course, but like literally anything could happen. Like anything could happen. They have the cap picks to use in any sort of trade. They have the salary cap space to absorb any big name player. They could stand pat. They could do anything. So, you know,
Well, so to your point of
that's for
the
us.
for the Caleb Williams part of this, one of my questions on here was, or is more likely to happen, the Bears trade Caleb Williams or the Kardashians go into a full year media blackout?
Oh God, I don't know that. Oh wow.
They're not going into a full all media blackout.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't think that's
And yet I don't think the
possible.
Bears are going to I don't think the Bears
Right.
are trading him either.
I think both are not gonna happen. I would say the media blackout by the Kardashians is less likely. I just don't that's that are you Kardashians if you have a media blackout? No, of course not. So yeah,
Okay,
I would say yeah.
you know, no need to think that hard. These questions are largely moronic, but that one in particular, if I'm mentioning the Kardashians, it is purely intended as silliness and nonsense.
I would say the Kardashians is less likely, but that doesn't mean Caleb Williams is going to get traded. That's yeah.
All right, we'll come back to the quarterbacks in a second, but yes, ultimately, I think the Minnesota part of this is intriguing. And I do say, I will just say this for the people who are trying to play detective at home, and I don't urge you to do that. And certainly I don't urge you to listen to random people on Twitter who claim sources and say they've heard things. Don't buy that as part of your thinking. But
Please,
as you're thinking of this stuff,
for all of us.
it is good to like look at, okay, what else is happening to try to figure out what is happening here. And the Minnesota one, I think, is at least somewhat interesting. In that regard. All right. Let's go to the free agents. Fill in the blank. Other than the
Okay.
linebacker room, the position group that improved the most so far in free agency is.
Defensive line, the edge rushing group. I mean, they had to get bodies there, period, because all their veteran defensive ends are free agents this year. But I like the guys they brought in so far. You know, veteran guys, most of them, if not all of them, if I'm mistaken, have ties to the coaching staff. So I mean, I would say that. I mean, it's kind of all connected to the linebacking core, but. They're the ones I would say the most.
Yeah, I mean,
Do you
considering
agree?
that there was nothing there,
Yeah.
right? Like, even if I wanted to say the secondary, because Jeremy Chinn and Mike Davis has played, it's not as good as Kendall Fuller. So I
Yeah.
can't say they've improved there. So that's probably right. Part of me kind of wants to say running back. I mean, I'm not discounting Antonio Gibson, but I am intrigued by the Austin Ekeler aspect of this. If really, you know, he said this, and I heard this as well, that like that high ankle sprain injury for him last year really affected him in what more than people are like discussing. And clearly his value wasn't that high on the market that they got him for, you know, relatively cheap. And, you know, he may not be the guy that leads the league in touchdowns
Right.
anymore, but if he's a legit home run threat out of the backfield, that would be, you know, pretty significant. So I mean, I think you're right, but I would just throw out running back as the other one I was debating.
Yes, I agree. I think the thing with Austin Ekeler that I go back and forth with is, you know, he was very good 2 years ago, and there's no, you know, he could easily get back to that. But I don't know that he's totally a guy in his prime anymore. He could, again, have another very fine year. He's coming off a down year. But that's why I would lean more toward the edge rushers, and partly because the bar was so low there because they just didn't have people.
Absolutely. Absolutely. But I have a question. This isn't relevant. You're wearing, we're, I'm looking at you here. You're wearing like a winter coat. It's not.
It's a very thin, it's Costco faction. Thank you very much. It's very thin. It's packable. It's just light. You know, I just
Packable.
wanted to
You
chill.
need to pack from the living room to the where we're doing this conversation.
I had a slight chill. I had a slight chill, is all.
All right. Well, I mean, look, I, you know, I've just wanted
Are
to.
you jealous of my jacket? Is that what it is?
No, definitely not. I mean, yes, it's a great jacket. Sorry. Yeah, it's fantastic. Fantastic.
Wish it's I bothering could... you. Like, it's, you know, I just have a slight chill is all.
I think it's because I'm feeling warm over here. I'm drinking coffee and I'm feeling warm. And like the jacket was like, God, why did I take that jacket off?
Oh, well, my coffee is cold at this point, as you know.
Yeah. Well, I just nobody cares about any of this. She gets a coffee and one all day. I just got my first one a couple hours ago or actually had to take less than an hour ago. So
what have you been doing all day? How are you functioning?
I don't know. Actually, that's why I decided to get it. It's been a journey over here today. We'll just leave it at that. All right.
Fair enough.
Back to the world here. Now, speaking of the free agents, pound for pound, meaning factoring in all the variables, salary, the player, the need, the fit, whatever it is, pound for pound, what's been your favorite signing or re-signing that they have made? As we speak, they're at 20.
Favorite signing or re-signing? I'd say, can I give you one of each?
Sure.
I'd say Frankie Luvu as a signing of an outside free agent. I think he's a guy that could be really good. And not just for 1 year, but for a few to come. And I mean, obviously linebacker is a position that has been lacking for many years. And I don't know. I like his story. I like, you know, undrafted guy, really had to work to prove himself. And now he's, you know, a well-paid starter. I think he could be really good in this system. I also like the Jeremy Chinn signing, but as far as a re-signing, I'm partial to Jeremy Reeves. I think he's the, you know, he's primarily a special teamer, reserve safety, but I think he's the type of guy you need in a locker room when you're transitioning or rebuilding or however you want to describe it. I think he's well-respected. Another guy that has had to work really hard to prove himself and earn his spot, and I think that's important, and guys seem to respect him. So, yeah, those are one for each category. Those are mine.
All right. I think Luvu is going to be, from a style of play, I think he's going to be fan favorite-ish off the bat. I mean, yes, and he's one of the three guys they brought in that – logically, unless everything goes wrong, should be here for a bit. It still cracks me up that after coming off the Ron Rivera era with Rivera, Jack Del Rio, and an actual linebacker coach, all of whom played in the NFL, that they could not
figure out that position.
Could not only figure it out, but other than Jamin Davis, just didn't really invest in it at all. And maybe that's right. I mean, it's not like linebackers are getting devalued around the league, but that said, this group, Luvu and Bobby Wagner, at that position, to the point where Jamin Davis in a 4-2-5 is going to be the backup guy.
Yeah. Yeah. And he's really only got a year left. I don't anticipate them exercising his fifth year option. So, you know, he's going to have to adjust and really prove himself if he wants to stay. So, yeah, it's interesting.
Yeah. All right. Let's go the other way. Sure. Of the 20, what's the one where you're like, I don't know that one. Let me see. I don't know about this one.
Marcus Mariota. I mean, I know that they needed to get a veteran back there just to spell any young guy that comes in. But to me, there's two reasons for doing that. One, to back him up. You need a guy who can step in and win. Fine. But you also, and probably more importantly, want a guy who's going to be sort of that mentor, that guy that can show the way. And it's perhaps Marcus Mariota becomes that guy. I have questions after the way things ended for him in Atlanta, where he kind of seemed to check out. To me, that's not sort of the precedent you want to set. That's not sort of that leadership model that you want for a young guy coming in. Now, granted, I was not there. I may not know the entirely full story. So I want to give him the benefit of the doubt there, but that left sort of a weird taste in my mouth. And I just like, I have questions after it. So that one, I didn't love that signing. I mean, you know, it's not like there are a ton of really exceptional backup quarterbacks. You're like, yes, absolutely. Definitely need to have him. The one that I think would have been perfect though, was the guy that was already here, Jacoby Brissett. So you got to kind of wonder, you know, not what led him to New England, because I think that's a good opportunity with a chance to start given the situation, depending on what they do in the draft, if they grab a guy that they feel isn't ready right away. But is there any part of him that felt compelled to just get out of Washington no matter what? That would be unfortunate, because I think he really would have been, you know, the perfect guy. A guy you know can step in and win, but is also a really good backup, a really good teammate, and can help a young guy along.
I have, I interviewed Sheil Kapadia, who was a former teammate of ours at The Athletic, who's now at The Ringer. And we talked about it, but he's also primarily focuses on the Eagles. So they had Mariota. So we discussed that. And he said, you know, there's just some guys you just don't enjoy watching. It's not that he's not capable of doing
it. I heard he's a really good guy. Like,
yeah. But there's something about his style. And I think for me, and I'm with you on the Mariota, I'm sure there's only so many options they can get. They can't just get anybody, but it's after, you know, if they get the, because I believe they should sit the rookie, but we'll deal with that later. But if he's going to play at all, within reasonable, he would play the first few weeks. This feels very much like, oh boy, I thought we got rid of the Carson Wentz, Ryan Fitzpatrick, Taylor Heineke level of quarterback. And now,
although I think Taylor Heineke could step in and win better, but again,
I mean, at least Sam Howell, regardless of anything you think about it, at least it was new and fresh and we didn't know. And that's one thing. Yeah. But anyway, they didn't have a ton of options. I'm not giving you a better name that they could have gotten, but yes, it's just, we'll see. And I am still very curious as to what their plan is about the quarterback starting him. There's been a lot of talk over the last few days. Mm-hmm. I mean, for years, but the last few days about the idea of developing quarterbacks and what's going wrong and, you know, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Let me ask you a non-Commanders question.
Okay.
You're up on like various league issues. The competition committee is going to submit or is submitting various proposals that will be voted on next week at the owners' meeting. One of them is involving the kickoff. They're trying to change the rules in pretty a dramatic way, because obviously right now, not only are there the constant injury concerns, but all the kickers are just kicking the ball into the stands and nothing's being run back. So they're trying to change it. And without getting into every single detail, basically it would be that like there's this position, like the last 20 yards kicking down the field, you have to land the ball in this space. Or if it goes into the end zone, then it's like the team gets the ball like at the 35, I think. And they're also like, you can't, the players aren't running down the field from all the way. They're basically running from like the 40 of the far side, but they can't even go until the ball gets down there, all these things. What do you make of this? Because it is a pretty radical attempt fix this.
Yes. I think the league has been, they've tried really hard to make it not be framed as, oh, they're copying the XFL, but this is very similar to the XFL. I mean, I think, you know, they're trying to strike that balance of, you know, let's not, you definitely don't want to increase injury rate because this can be a very dangerous play, as we all know. But I know they, you know, it was a 22% return rate on kickoffs last season, which was the lowest in modern day league history. I think the previous low, it was 38% in 2022. 23% of kickoffs went through the end zone, which is the highest in modern day league history. So they're trying to help the game in that regard. And anytime they do any of these proposed rule changes, it's all about ways to improve the game. And largely it's finding ways to improve the game as a product, as a TV product, as an entertainment product. So, you know, when they talk about, oh, scoring is down, well, that's because people like more scoring. That's why they're always trying to find ways to improve that. And, you know, so this is one of those. And they've been talking about this for a while now. I know, you know, I sat through a pretty intense presentation. It was about 90 minutes with Troy Vincent from the league and others to really fully understand why they're proposing this and, you know, all that goes into it. And it's extensive. You know, they talk with the coach subcommittee and, you know, the competition committee, and, you know, it's extensive. So I think they're trying to go through all of it and kind of go through their options. But yeah, it would be a dramatic change for sure.
You know, we know that like Antonio Gibson returned kicks last year and actually did it pretty well from an average perspective. I haven't even honestly really thought yet about who would be the replacement at this point, and could be somebody in the draft. But it does feel like if they're going to do this, that there needs to be more of an emphasis on who they're going to have do this, because it did feel like the last couple of years, you know, is a bit of an afterthought. They let DeAndre Carter go, Dax Milne, you know, whatever, he was okay, but just didn't do much more. Jameson Crowder honestly was about the same. Those are punt returns, but in general, the return, you know, and Gibson, you know, if Gibson doesn't have the fumbling, maybe he never even gets back there, right? So I do wonder if they're going to put more of an emphasis on that, because at the moment, I don't see who that person is on the roster.
Right.
All right, so we just pause because Nikki had somebody at the door. You want to tell it? Now you interrupted the show. You got to tell everybody what you got.
Oh, just, you know, a book that I needed desperately.
Okay.
You know, great. Nothing terribly exciting.
All right, fair enough. I really only asked that just to make her nervous and embarrassed. All right, here's the next question. I'm bringing this up in part because it's a topic. You guys had a story about this today to a degree. True or false, did the Commanders make a mistake by not re-signing Cam Curl?
A mistake? I mean, I guess we'll know in like a year or two, really. I don't know. I mean, I think he's a very fine player. I think he's versatile. I would have been interested to see what he can do in this defense. I'm only surprised that, well, I shouldn't say surprised. I'm not totally surprised. I'm surprised when people think the value to keep him should have been or would have been, you know, more than $10 million a year. I think here's the reality, fair or not, for Cam Curl is the numbers matter for contracts. And he didn't have the numbers of some of the elite contracts, just talking about like interceptions and on ball play. So that really affected his value on the open market. Now, that alone is, that doesn't count everything he brings with his versatility, or, you know, doesn't factor in why he didn't have those numbers, if it was others around him or scheme or coaching or whatever, but that doesn't matter. He didn't have the numbers. And then once the safety market flooded ahead of free agency, that didn't help him at all. But I don't think he was ever going to get more than $10 million a year. If that, largely because of the numbers. I was a little surprised it ended up being 4.5 a year. I didn't think it'd go quite that low. I was thinking more like 6-7 a year. But will they regret it? I guess we'll see. We'll see. You know, I think he has a chance to do really good things. And, you know, with the Rams, working with Sean McVay, it'll be interesting to see what the Rams look like without Aaron Donald. But I also like Jeremy Chinn. I think he's a really good signing. I know he too is coming off a down year, but he had a heck of a start to his career, and it'd be interesting to see if he can get back there. So it's too early to say if it was a mistake.
So I'll just put this into the discussion as well. So a lot of people are saying, well, wait a minute, if he only went for 2 years, $8.5 million, there's incentives to get to 12, but 2 for $8.5 million. Why on earth
2 for 9
would you not have resigned him? And here's where this conversation goes off the rails for me. One, as we discussed, if you looked at all the projections out there, now I'm not saying that they're typically right, but they're at least in the general ballpark of something. They were all putting Cam Curl somewhere in the top 50 or so prospects of a free agent with a salary commiserate for that. Our guy, Randy Mueller, did not. He didn't even have his top 150. We've discussed that.
Yeah.
But at the point that, so he's thinking he's getting a $10 million contract, give or take. His father went on Twitter and said as much many times, right? Not that he speaks for Cam or the agent, but there's something there. Oh, she's going to say something. Right. Oh, no, hold on.
Continue. I don't want to cut you off. No, continue.
So, but my point is that once it's like, wait a minute, if the Rams are getting from that, why didn't you do it? Because that ship sailed. They went day one, got Jeremy Chinn. And this isn't just, you can't just go get everybody. At some point, you have to, here's our plan. We have a budget for this. We're spending that. And Jeremy Chinn was doing, took the 5 million or so, whatever, 5.2, I think. Here's the other thing. I've heard this argument already. Well, he's a homegrown guy. This is the type of guy. He's 25 years old. You got to bring him back. You know what? You know who he's not homegrown to? Everybody who's making the decisions here now.
Exactly.
You know who has a relationship to a coach on the staff? Jeremy Chinn, because Jonathan Simmons, the defensive pass game coordinator, worked with him at Carolina. All of Cam Curl's people are gone. So from Adam Peters' perspective, and Dan Quinn, every single free agent was no different than every free agent from any other team. And
right.
they decided that Jeremy Chinn, who, you know, has the last year wasn't great, but he was good in, you know, 2020, second place defensive rookie of the year, what have you, was good for them. And he was willing to take the deal. He did.
Right.
And if Camp Crowell is looking to get $10 million more, what's the even point of discussing it? They weren't going to spend that. I think that needs to be discussed. Just because the idea that they should have gotten him for that money. No, unless that was happening
right.
day one, it doesn't matter.
Well, and nobody else was willing to pay that money. So that's the market value. What he got is that, I mean, if that's what he took, that's his new market value. But like, you know, I think Cam is a very fine player. I think he has the potential to be a very, very good safety. I think he and others had hoped he had put up probably bigger numbers than he did. Again, I'm not putting the blame solely on him. I think there were so many outstanding factors with that defense and everything that was going on. There are a number of issues, but again, the context for the contracts doesn't really matter. It's either you either have the numbers or you don't. The projections for Cam Curl were highest after, not this past season, but the one before, in part because of the potential. I think there were expectations that he would have, you know, statistically a more productive season than he did. That didn't happen. So the projections from then are not applicable. And I think after the combine, I mean, the projections for him varied widely. I mean, I heard as low as 5, I heard as high as 12, which is just insane to have that variance. But I think you knew then that like after this past season, he was not going to get top dollar. And I say this with all due respect to Cam Curl, I think he's a very good safety, but statistically he is not among the elite. And therefore you can't pay him among the elite. Do I think he can get there? Sure. I think anything is possible. I think he's a good player. And those are hard to find. I think he's a smart player. But this group did not plan to spend top dollar and break the bank on any one person in free agency, you know, his value aside. So it aligns with what they had planned all along. And they got Jeremy Chinn, like you said, on a very team-friendly deal.
All true. Also, it's just a bad position. Like, if you're at that position where the league devalues, as we're seeing, is devaluing, you need to be enough of a difference maker there. If he was the exact same player but played edge, there would be a different market because he's good. He's a good player. Just didn't have those numbers. All right.
Safeties have always been devalued with pay throughout the league in the Hall of Fame. I mean, it took a long time before they went on a run of safeties with John Lynch and Steve Atwater and all the nine. So.
All right. Two more questions, then you can go read your book. Fact or fiction, Cornelius Lucas will be the week one starter at left tackle.
I'm going to say fiction. And that's basically mostly based on hope that they draft somebody and draft somebody high enough to where they feel compelled to start him immediately and really work to get him reps. So I'm going with fiction.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's reasonable to assume that they're going to take a tackle with one of those 2 second round picks, you would think.
Yeah.
Then the question is just, is that player like, you know, a 4-year starter? He did all these things. He's ready to go. Or is it more of the developmental type guy? So I'm going to say fact, especially if the quarterback is the rookie, which may not be, but like at least, you know, Lucas isn't maybe an answer for 17 games, but he's been fine. So, and I think also that's a good example of like, they had a big need at that spot. And while again, Peters and them view him as he's no different than anybody else. He has been here. He was good. They needed exactly what he was. Mm-hmm. They didn't sign somebody else the way they did with Jeremy Chinn. So I think, yeah. So I'll say yes, but sure. If they bring in a rookie who's ready to go, then that guy is going to be the answer. Before I ask the last question, do you have anything you would like to ask, get off your chest, make a point about, stir some drama, whatever you got?
You want a hot take, huh?
Yeah. You know, do we have to call it a hot take if it's from you? I mean, aren't they just automatically?
Touche. No, I got nothing.
Wow. Okay. I'm going to remind, if I ever do improv, you're not my partner. All right. If this isn't the question, actually, but I was thinking, if Adam Peters and Dan Quinn wanted to take you out to dinner before or after your pro day, where would you want them to take you?
King crab legs. I mean,
sure.
That's a winner.
Hard.
Where do you want me to sign?
Right. You know, you get crabs, lobster, anything along that line. Crab cake. I love crab cake, and yet I'm always unsatisfied with
it's
what
like
I get.
It's like sushi. I love sushi, but like I'm always hungry after I have it. And like I can't just sit there and eat like a whole tray of, I mean, I
well,
would like to, but
you're not a glutton like most of us,
I mean,
which is a good thing.
I don't know about that.
All right, last question. The most important one.
Okay.
What are they going to do it to? And I don't mean, are they going to draft a quarterback? And I understand we don't know.
You want a name.
I'm just saying.
Unbelievable.
I'm just saying.
I get through the whole podcast without a hot take, and you force it upon me. Okay.
Look, this is what I do. I mean, it's, again, I'm acknowledging that they're keeping it close to the vest. So saying you think X, Y, or Z for the player isn't necessarily, I'm not. We don't know. Maybe you do, but I mean, generally we don't. But it's more of just like the logic, the rationale. This is why I like these conversations, because it is having to think about what makes sense, what doesn't, what evidence do you see that says, I think this person makes sense, or maybe they trade out, whatever it is.
All right, I'll give you a hot take. Again, this is based on nothing. So don't come at me on the X. They'll take JJ McCarthy at 2.
Wow.
You wanted a hot take.
There we go. You're saying it's not, I get it. You're saying it's not based on reporting, but what are you basing it on?
I feel like every draft we all go into this with an assumed 1, 2, 3 or a group of the top guys. And at some point throughout that list changes. Which is always astounding to me because the player has not played. I'm just speculating. I'm not saying I think he is. I'm speculating. What if teams see more upside in him than somebody else that's higher?
The combination. So I always say there's no risers and fallers in the draft.
There's no risers and fallers. Please don't ever say, like, I hate that more than anything.
Right. It's just like, the outside world is
momentum.
Catching up.
There's no momentum. Like, right. They have their boards.
Right. Unless we're talking about somebody who played, like, at a lower level where realistically it was harder to see. Or maybe it's, like, somebody was a backup for one of the bigger schools. And then you're like, oh, wait a minute. Why wasn't this guy playing? But in general, you're right. The outside is just catching up to the scouts.
Yes.
And it's not, nothing. I mean, again, unless they went into an interview and just said, you know, terrible things or something. Right. There is none of that. So, right. All right. Well, that's interesting. All right. So everybody put that out there on social media. Nikki's, no, I'm just kidding.
Yeah.
Look, it's at this point, I don't know what to believe with the quarterbacks, and therefore, and since we don't know what they're thinking, the one thing I do wonder about McCarthy is of the four, the top four, he's the one I think that probably needs to sit the most. He's 21. Neither he or Drake May has played a lot. Then it brings it back to the Mariota part. Obviously, Mariota has started. They can start and whatever. But
I know.
Like, to what end is that of interest?
Of interest to me? I don't want to see that.
Yeah.
But it does make me question the work of Mariota signing. And again, he may turn out to be just fine. I have questions. I'm
all right,
a reporter. I have questions.
You did a good job answering these questions. You were more than just fine, per usual. Anything you need to tell the people about what you've got going on? You're withholding information from me about what you're working on. So you wanted to tell the audience, I won't listen.
I do not.
Nothing in the pipeline. All right.
Feel free to read the Washington Post. WashingtonPost.com/sports.
Right. And at Nikki Javala on Twitter and other forms of social
media. It's not that big of news. Don't worry.
I worry about everything. All right. Appreciate the time. Have a great rest of the day. And, we'll see if they sign anybody else before the day ends.
Sounds good. Thanks for having me.
All right. Many thanks to Nikki Jabala for her time. Thanks to everyone here for checking out the podcast and, of course, checking out my work on The Athletic. Look forward to diving into this more. And look, I think the draft is clearly going to be it's back to being the main topic for sure. I will have, I believe, a first-round mock draft next week up on The Athletic, so you'll be able to check that out, and I'll talk about it here as well. But that is it for now. Ben Standick signing off. Until next time.